So I've been talking in and around the NBA Finals. Let's get right into it. Break this thing down. We are joined by a national NBA writer for the LA Times. He is a friend of the program. He was a panelist on our daily TV show back in the day. Not to be confused with this daily TV show, which is also a simulcast. That was a separate and distinct TV show. He is Dan Wojcicki. Dan, you and I spoke just over a month ago. So let me start right here, Dan. 1 month later, how is life in the bubble? And with the finals getting underway tonight, is there a feeling like the end is now in sight, Dan?
There is. That feeling is, I think everybody around here feels it, that it's like finally there's an end date. Finally there's, home doesn't feel so far away for everybody. But it's weird, Jim. Like, you know, you do really settle into sort of a routine. It strikes me that it's like, you know, I've essentially lived in this hotel room that I'm in now for a month, the longest I've ever stayed in the same hotel room. And it does sort of feel like home without, like, you know, obviously the people and things that you love. But it's like, oh, I've got to go home. Like, I've caught myself saying that a couple times. Like, I'm going to go right from home. And it's weird, like, you know, home is two twin beds and a flat screen TV and no microwave. You know what I mean? A small fridge.
That is something.
That's home right now.
It is the new normal.
No, yeah, it's getting used to it for sure.
The new normal. Dan Wojcicki joining us. All right, well said. You know, when you look at the Heat, let me start right there, Dan. After Tyler Hero's huge game against the Celtics, Jimmy Butler was wearing Hero's high school jersey the next day. And then after the Heat finished off that series, you wrote that Butler broke out an Eric Spoelstra University of Portland jersey. So what about that gesture? What's that say about what Butler and the rest of the team think about Spoelstra in particular?
Well, I mean, I think that they know how important he is to sort of where the organization is, right? That there wasn't that long ago, really, when Miami's 9-8 with LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh playing together for the first time, and there were real questions about his job security. And Pat Riley didn't waver, thought that Spo was the right guy. Obviously, history has proven him correct, you know, tenfold on this. But he's just such a steady presence. And I think the thing that strikes me being around the Heat a little bit, you know, over this last month is just how in line everybody in that organization is, from star to coach to front office to ownership. It's maybe as straight of a line through those principles as there is in the NBA. And that's where, when people talk about Heat culture, and you're going to hear it a lot during these finals, particularly if Miami plays well. You're going to hear that word a lot. They'll say it's a commitment to winning. They'll say it's a selflessness and playing tough and playing together. And those things are all true. But I really think it's the last thing. It's that this is a group that is very much together. And that's why, Jim, honestly, you know, if you were trying to talk yourself into this being a competitive series, and if you're trying to talk yourself into a way that Miami wins, to me, I think you can kind of look at the 2004 Pistons and say that was a team that went up against a team that had four Hall of Famers. This Laker team, you know, has two or three, three for sure. That team with Chauncey Billups and Ben Wallace and Tayshaun Prince, they controlled tempo in that series. They put their will on it. But ultimately, they won because the sum of their parts was greater than the individualism that they were facing. And I think that's what the Heat have to try to turn this series into is, you know, we're a team and we're going to play a team of five individuals. It'll be a challenge, but I think there's a pathway.
Dan Wojcicki is joining us. You know, Dan, I want to talk to him in a minute about the matchups, but you've got a really interesting piece up in the LA Times about Kobe Bryant's shoes and the number of players, coaches, and staffers who wear them. As you've written, at a typical Lakers practice, you might see a dozen different people wearing Kobe's. Why is that?
I mean, I think it's just he's everywhere in terms of what this team, the Lakers, are doing here, right? Like, there are patches on jerseys. Guys will wear T-shirts and things like that to pay tribute. But this is such a little thing, I think, that people, particularly, you know, guys that aren't playing, right? Like, the shoe's a good performance shoe and stuff like that, and I'm not going to show for Nike in that way. But I think it's, you know, it's a way for people like Rob Pelinka, Jason Kidd, some of the people in security on the team that worked with Kobe Bryant, it's just it's a little way that, to kind of bring him with you on this journey. You know, I think that they feel certainly lifted by the memory of Kobe Bryant, and I think for the people that are particularly close to him or were close to him, I do think it's a way to think about Kobe without being kind of pushed down this rabbit hole of sadness, which, you know, comes with any untimely death, right? Especially one in which children are involved. Like if you sit and think about how Kobe Bryant left this planet, you can get sad very, very quickly, very, very deeply. I think, you know, for like Rob Pelinka, for instance, right? Instead of like focusing on that, like when Rob Pelinka puts on the Kobe sneakers, you know, for him, he's transported back to those meetings that he had with Nike, right? Where Kobe is talking about how he wants, you know, a shoe to be inspired by the way like a shark moves through water and very Kobe things, also very Rob Pelinka things. But like, you know, it takes you to a place and it doesn't take you to the tragedy. It takes you to good memories. For Jason Kidd, it takes you back to the Olympics when you guys were competing against one another or with each other after years of competing against one another. For Dwight Howard, you know, it takes you to a good place. And I think there's some power in that. And you know, it is one of those things with so many things in this past year that if you really, really stop and focus on it, it can get dark really quickly. But I think that these small little things can, ignite good memories instead of focusing kind of on the sorrow of the situation.
Dan Wojcicki covering the NBA for the Los Angeles Times. Well said, Dan. Good on you. Before I let you go, and I want to ask you about the LA Clippers. You and I talked for years about the Clippers. You covered them. You were on that beat. What was your reaction when it was announced that Doc Rivers would not be returning next year? Did that surprise you at all?
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, I think there were obviously, you know, when you blow a 3-1 lead, there are problems or ramifications and stuff like that. But I think, you know, Steve Ballmer was such a wild card in this, is that people didn't really know how he would react. And aggressively is the word. To me, Jim, one of the most surprising things in the last 36 hours or so in talking to people about what happened in L.A. was that my initial reaction is that, like, you don't fire Doc Rivers unless you're positive that you've got somebody that you think is better lined up. And that doesn't seem to be the case. You know, this was not we have a guy we want to go with for sure. Let's make this move so we can clear the seat for this person. Now, I think they really like Tyronn Lue. I think that is a Doc Rivers protege. He was on the bench this year. You know, I think that is a logical sort of halfway point sort of in a change. I don't feel like they need to like blow up the organization in any sense. And so Ty Lue helps them get there. But I think beyond that, it's really hard to say, you know, go hire Coach X and you're going to be markedly better than you were with Doc Rivers. Now, I think there's something to be said about after a long period of time, just changing a voice, things run their course. It's one of those jobs, Jim, that, you know, when you sign up to coach, you're essentially setting up to eventually be fired. That's a reality for pretty much everybody who takes that job, and Doc knows that. But I think I was surprised. I know he was a little surprised that it went down like this. And, you know, the Clippers have a monumental decision to make, because at the end of next season, whenever that is, Kawhi Leonard can opt out, Paul George can be a free agent, and sort of the future of the franchise rests in their ability to move forwards in a positive direction out of this.
So one follow, Dan. In your opinion, what do you make of how they completely collapsed against the Nuggets? Like, how much of that is on Doc, and how much of that is on the players?
I mean, I think most of the time the blame goes to the players, right? I mean, look, Doc Rivers was stubborn in that series. I think he stayed with Montrezl Harrell too long. I think that if you look sort of big picture, their inability to form trust in their younger players, their inability to develop guys faster, I think certainly limited his options in these series. You know, did he make the big adjustment? He didn't. I'll say in Doc Rivers' defense, in all three of those games they lost, they didn't make the adjustment, and they were still up by double digits in all of those games, right? And at some point, Denver would make a push, and there was nobody who could stop it, and that was Doc Rivers' fault, but it's also Kawhi Leonard's fault. It's also Paul George's fault. It's also Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell's fault. You know, the guys on the court that needed to kind of put their foot down and you know, grab control of this and just get the Clippers over the hump once. They had three chances. They didn't do it. They tightened up. They played like a team, you know, that was it was too easy, I guess, for them to let go of the rope in those situations. And we saw, look, Denver made a push against the Lakers, and the Lakers at first sort of wavered, but then they got their footing and they responded. The Clippers didn't do that three straight times. Like, yeah, that's certainly coaching, but I think there's also some really fundamental problems with the roster that they're going to have to address. And mostly it's not a skill thing, Jim. I think it's a leadership thing. And they need to find somebody who, in those, when things happen like that, are, you know, somebody good enough that can speak up and help kind of get everybody settled down.
Couldn't agree more with that point. It is a leadership thing. Somebody's got to lead from the front, and their big two did not do that. All right, Dan, really quickly, so you mentioned the Lakers. On the way out the door, a lot of Laker fans might take the approach that, hey, there's no way we can lose. We've got LeBron. We've got AD. The team has been through so much. This is destiny. What is your reaction when you hear that?
I mean, I think that those are all good arguments. you know, ultimately, that's why I picked the Lakers to win this series in six games, is that I think at every turn this year, just no matter how many other flaws are on the roster or anything like that, that LeBron James and Anthony Davis have just been too good every time, right? Like, it hasn't mattered otherwise. Those two guys have done enough, and they're so dynamic. And ultimately, I just don't think that's different enough against Miami. I do think the Heat have been spectacular in the bubble. They have got an amazing mindset, an amazing belief, tons of swagger, tons of confidence and toughness. But so do the Lakers. And I think the Lakers, on top of all of those things, have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And it's just this advantage that no one else has been able to overcome. And I don't think anybody will be able to overcome it, you know, in the finals. And I think the Lakers get their storybook ending.
I see it the same way. I like it, though. I'm really looking forward to it. The finals get underway this evening. He is a national NBA writer for the LA Times. And again, a panelist on the daily TV show Back in the Day, Dan Wojcicki, my guest. Great job, Dan. You're almost there. Hang in there. Keep grinding. And I know we'll do it again soon.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
Good job, Dan. Well done. Dan Wojcicki, excellent NBA writer for the LA Times.